welcome back. Another episode of Free to Change Podcast Series on your freestyle MC hosted partner, Joseph Ward. Down here riding with my homeboy, Mr. Patrick Irvin, over there bouncing with your homeboy, bounce with it. What's good, man?
Come on, man. You're chilling.
Remember that Freedom Train Podcast Series is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And go to the website, www.paxinc.org, to learn more about the organization, how you can become involved, codes of conduct. Also, go to that Learning Center, that Amazon Smile program, Amazon.com, sign up and everything, and support PAX Inc., man, how they do everything. And they bring this show to you every week. So that's how we get down. Make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com so you can see me, Pat, Shelby, Candace, Enigma, Cliff, everybody else who want to get down with us. We on here doing our thing, www.freedomtrainradio.com. So we got three topics that we're going to bush all in the head with today. We're going to catch up on this Elijah McCain situation because the grand jury has indicted police officers and paramedics in the 2019 death of Elijah McCain. And that's I don't remember. I think it was some coverage of this, but it died down pretty quickly. I think this was one of those average 2 week wave things. Maybe didn't even last 2 weeks for Elijah McCain. So now police officers and paramedics are being indicted by a grand jury on his death. So we're going to learn about that. You know, we've defended Sha'Carri Richardson in the past. Just go look at the past videos. We've defended her. But Sha'Carri been tripping and she ain't been winning. So we're not here to jump down her throat. We're just offering some perspectives to some things, especially what's going on between her and Allison Felix. And it's not really a beef going on that we can actually definitively say. But we do know that Allison gave some supporting words and Sha'Carri shot back with some unsupportive words. So we're going to get into that. And she ain't been winning. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to get into what happened between the United States of America and Afghanistan. Actually, the United States pulling out of Afghanistan. After 20 years occupying Afghanistan, United States is pulling out. So we're going to talk about that and what's the effects on that and some interesting things that we've saw surrounding that. So 2019, young man named Elijah McCain was murdered by police officers. And from some of the evidence that's been given, they're saying that paramedics aided in the death of Elijah McCain. So let's read this article from CNN to get caught up on what's going on. You see, I got my news voice on too. It says, a Colorado grand jury indicted three police officers and two paramedics involved in the August 2019 death of Elijah McCain. A 23-year-old black man who was stopped by police while walking home from a store, placed in some kind of hole, in a chaotic hole, and then injected with ketamine, Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser announced Wednesday. Aurora Police Officer Randy Rodema and Nathan Woodyard, former police officer Jason Rosenblatt, and Aurora Fire Rescue paramedic Jeremy Cooper and Peter, crazy last name, were each indicted on charges of manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide as a part of a 32-count indictment. In addition, Rodema and Rosenblatt were each inducted on one account of assault and one count of crime of violence. And Cooper and Chichilinchik, crazy last name, were each indicted on three counts of assault and six accounts of crime of violence. We're here today because Elijah McCain is not here and should be, Weiser said. When he died, he was only 23 years old. He had his whole life ahead of him, and his family and his friends must go on without him now. The grand jury returned the results of the investigation on Thursday, nearly 2 years since McCain's death. The indictment is in sharp contrast to prosecutors' initial conclusions in the case. In 2019, Adams County District Attorney Dave Young declined to bring criminal charges because he said prosecutors lacked evidence to prove the officers caused McCain's death or that their force was unjustified. But McClain's story gained renewed attention just after the police killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and at the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. Spurred by protests in Aurora and a viral online petition, Governor Jared Polis announced a reexamination of the case last year. Wiser was appointed as special prosecutor and opened a grand jury investigation into the case in January. In general, police officers rarely face criminal charges for the in-custody death of Black people, and convictions in such cases are even rarer. In this news conference Wednesday, Wiser acknowledged the challenge ahead for prosecutors. Make no mistake, we recognize that this case will be difficult to prosecute, okay? These types of cases always are, he said. Our goal is to seek justice for Brother McCain, for his family and friends, and for our state. In doing so, we advance the rule of law to our commitment that everyone is accountable and equal under the law. McCain's mother, Shanine McCain, told CNN in a phone interview that she was excited by news of the indictments and thanked Wiser and his team and the grand jury. I started crying because it's been 2 years, she said. It's been a long journey, you know, and it's overwhelming. I'm still processing it, you know, because this is one of those things that's never really been done, and it's being done right here because of my son, so it's overwhelming. McCain's father, LaWayne Mosley, wept tears of joy at the news, according to a statement from his attorney. Nothing will bring back my son, but I'm thankful that his killers will finally be held accountable, Mosley said in a statement. The Aurora Police Department, Aurora Fire Rescue, and defendants did not immediately respond to a request for a comment. Following the city rules, officers and firefighters indicted on felony charges are immediately and indefinitely suspended without pay, Aurora City Manager Jim Tombly said in a statement. So that's what we know so far.
What you think?
Well, like I said, this is rare. This is some rare shit. Definitely some rare stuff. Cause when I first heard about it, like the three officers and the two paramedics being indicted, I was like, that's it's rare in the precedents that it's doing, but we're seeing now that I guess we could say since Amber Geiger, we've seen maybe two or three officers be indicted after Amber Geiger was indicted or charged, criminally charged, and went to jail. So we've seen a couple incidents, or maybe two or three incidents since that. First time I've seen paramedics be into this, because they're saying they gave him ketamine and the ketamine sped up to death, and he didn't need ketamine at the time. So I am, of course, you know, I'm always skeptical about some of these things. We do understand some people can be everybody not going to be shielded by that white supremacy stuff. Some people going to be casualties. We do understand that. Some people going to be casualties. I'm wondering if we're going to start to see a different type of pattern, because we're both always talking about how white supremacy, it adapts.
Mm-hmm.
And so could some of the adaptation now be, hey man, if they messed up, like, there it go. Is the adaptation the illusion of justice, or is justice really starting to, are black people truly starting to get justice in the United States? But of course, we don't believe that black people are getting justice in the United States, because we don't trust the United States and its judicial system. But The question has to be asked: is it an illusion of justice, a continued illusion of justice, or is it something that's actually a turning point? What are your thoughts?
Well, Jim, I'll tell you this.
Yeah, tell me. Tell me, Bob.
I was looking at some stats last year when I did a show around police and police indictments and all of that, and I can't remember them exactly. So if I'm wrong, correct me in the comments or correct me wherever. But I think it was less than 1% of police officers are indicted for abuse of power amongst black people.
Right, right.
And amongst that 1% or less that are indicted, I think it was like less than 10% of them are actually convicted.
Okay.
So you're talking about 10% of 1% that actually get convicted.
Right. A small percentage of a small percentage of a small percentage.
Right. So, but you are right. There has been kind of a new shift in pattern coming up where now they do seem to be indicting them more now than they have at any point in time historically.
Right.
I'm still questioning the use of grand juries because it's not a necessary step in the legal process.
Just break that down for us.
Well, from what I understand, and a lawyer can please get on and correct me if I'm wrong. But from what I understand, a grand jury is the prosecutor's way of seeing how a trial might go. So is their way of saying, if I brought this to court right now with the evidence I have available to me right now, would I succeed in getting a conviction? And the grand jury basically says yes or no. Now, I'm not saying it's not a valuable step, but what I am saying is just because you don't get a grand jury indictment doesn't mean that you can't bring charges for it anyways. Right. Doesn't mean you can't proceed. Right. So the fact that a lot of these cases end with the grand jury not indicting or not saying yes, and the lawyers just basically back all the way out, I always felt like that was kind of the lawyer's way of not really pushing the case that they didn't really want to push. You know, it's kind of like it gave them an out. Not to mention a lot of other problems I have with that whole process. But what you're saying as far as it being a new pattern, I think that's real because... And it'll definitely be the illusion because for me, you look at like how extreme things have to be to even get an indictment. Basically, the paramedics and the police were in cahoots to murder somebody.
Basically, what they're saying. But no, this indictment was brought back up because of the lawyers continue work and the communities continue work for getting justice for Elijah McCain. Because at first they didn't get the charges.
Right. Right. See,
now it's like, okay, well, let's reopen this. So Lord said the governor, like, let's reopen this case. And so I don't because I want to be careful how I say this, because there's a way to protest and as a way to protest to get the right results or desired results, and there's a way to protest to get the illusion of your desired results. Nobody wants to protest to just be out there losing weight, right? People want to protest to be able to achieve a goal.
Allegedly.
Right. For the most part. but so in this case, whatever they did right. Because for one, did we know about these protests? Did people around the country know about these protests?
I would say no.
Most people didn't hear about this. This was something that I guess you could say the media didn't deem as newsworthy.
Right.
So these, we're talking about people on a grassroots level who understood the mission and got the mission done without a large media outcry. So that to me, and of course I don't know all the details, but just from what we got to put together and the information we're going off of, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. They protested in a good manner. They did effective protesting. They wasn't out there trying to be famous. They had a goal and they met their goal. Hey, we want to get these police officers and these paramedics indicted because this young man has been killed by these people. Rather than the story being, or the protest being picked up by the media and then being picked up around the country. And yeah, you get a lot of this and you get a lot of that, but do you really get the desired outcome that you get? And I think a lot of people may need to take a look at this and what they're doing, because yes, there are situations where you need to bring media attention to things, but there are also situations or more than likely where you just need actions to get things done because you have a desired goal rather than just trying to bring media attention. Your goal should be greater than bringing media attention. And it seems like they use protesting effectively enough to get their desired goal. So shout out to everybody out there.
Absolutely. They did what they needed to do. And I agree with everything you said, because, you know, media attention doesn't always bring media attention brings everything the media attention brings with it. The characters chasing clout, the people that want to co-op, all of the people that see this as an opportunity for them to do whatever it is they want to do. Like, all of that stuff comes with it. So in a lot of situations, media attention is the wrong attention for what you're trying to do. So I agree with what you're saying. And I think the question that you asked earlier about is, that's why my mind keeps going back to that. Is this real change, or is this the illusion of change? Because I think that that's a really, really good question. And like I said earlier, I'm leaning towards the illusion of change. Just because the amount of work that has to happen to even get this far, and the egregious level of activity that has to be engaged in to get this far. If they just punched a man in the face, which is something that happens regularly, people regularly get physically abused by cops, we're still not at a point where we're seeing cops being held accountable for that. We're still at the point of struggling to get loss of life held accountable.
See, once again, that goes back to my question about the George Floyd death. Because his death was no more, his death was no more significant than anybody else's death. So why did it take his death to be sensationalized by the media for the masses of people, black and non-black, to actually say, hey, we need to speak up. We need to do something about this. Because it's like lives aren't valued unless the media says you're supposed to value, or unless
it's not like that's exactly how it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the crazy thing about it though. And so it's cool that they're able to get to this point in this particular case without the fanfare surrounding it in you know, the show. But let me read this part. It says indictment differs on cause of death. Indictment differs most clearly from prior documents in regards to the officers and paramedics' actions as having possibly caused his death. An initial autopsy conducted by the county coroner did not determine the cause of death, but noted intense physical exertion and a narrow left coronary artery were contributing factors. The coroner found that the amount of ketamine in his system to be a therapeutic amount. There was no official determination as to how McCain died. At a point, the district attorney noted in his explanation of why he decided not to prosecute, and they talking about the initial prosecution, where the initial push to prosecute. Mm-hmm. I cannot take a case to the jury where I don't know what the cause of death is on the homicide case. And this is a guy named Dave Young. That's the district attorney, Dave Young. So my question is, why could you not determine the cause of death through the autopsy? That's what I would like to know in the initial autopsy. Why? Because that's the point of the autopsy, to determine the cause of death. So why go through all of that, but you still cannot determine the cause of death in something like this? Help me.
I can't.
Somebody in the comments.
Yeah.
A medical motherfucker, y'all help me out.
I'm not familiar with this case well enough to talk about that. You know, usually I've been read through a bunch of stuff, and you know, but this time I wasn't able to do that. But
I'm just talking like general autopsies, though. Like that's just not even talk this case. Let's just talk autopsies.
Well, generally speaking, I mean, I'd agree with you. One of the primary purposes of an autopsy is to determine the cause of death. And even if there isn't a cause of death explicitly determined, there are still like potential causes of death that are identified.
Right.
So I'm not real sure without looking at this particular autopsy report why the DA would say something like that. But I will point out that it brings forward the concern I said earlier, which is that DAs use grand juries and other things as a scapegoat for why they don't want to take a case. Basically, he chose not to take the case the first go around. They dug in his ass and he changed his mind. Or the office changed its mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Coochie.
So, but even with that, you know, the question has to be asked. Even if you aren't winning these cases, if you're constantly bringing these cases forward and going to trial with these cases, does that create enough pressure just by the sheer volume of cases to elicit change? That's something that we're never really going to get to see, because no district attorney's office is willing to go to court with a case that they're not going to win just to make a statement.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder, because this article really didn't get into any new evidence. They got into a renewed energy around it, but it didn't get into any renewed evidence of what was going on with this. So this is definitely a case that we're going to keep our eye on, come back to, because, I mean, the indictments and all these things are happening. So definitely come back to and give y'all an update on it and update ourselves on it as well. But it's a very peculiar case. Very peculiar. I'm happy that they are where they are. But once again, you know, we don't want none of that liberal bullshit to try to say y'all are friends. And you really ain't our friends, because y'all ain't never been our friends. So that ain't what we want. So we want some real shit. So, you know, let's talk about the dynamic of Shakari Richardson and Allyson Felix. So y'all been, and we know y'all been watching us, and so we've been talking about what's been going on with Shakari for a minute. So a couple weeks ago, Allyson Felix was on the Jimmy Kimmel show, and Jimmy Kimmel asked her about how she felt about Shakari Richardson and everything that was going on. So, you know, Allyson gave some encouraging words, and Shakari responded in her Instagram stories, basically paraphrasing, saying, kind words from the TV don't mean nothing. And then she put out another story on Instagram or whatever. But, you know, a lot of she been real spicy in her tweets and stuff on Twitter and all these things. And then come back this last week, I know she came in fourth in the 200 and like second and third in the 100.
And she came in
fourth in the 100.
Fourth in the 100 and second in the 200.
200, right. And so I know in the 100, the young lady who did come in first was another Jamaican lady. So, of course, Shakari Richardson has given people a lot of content to go in on her ass. We didn't come here to go in on her ass, but we, you know, OG perspectives. We, me and Pat, we old enough to be one-star OGs. When you reach about 35, man, you get to be at least a one-star OG, right? So, you know, just some OG, of course. Hey, man, look, man, we ain't trying to say we know it all, but it's just, like we said last time, we wish she had better people around her, especially PR-wise. Get off that phone, get off Twitter. Just go off the grid for a minute and just do you. We're not saying that, because we know she got to get back into her track shape. So she went from the Prefontaine, but let's be real. the field she was running against in the Prefontaine is definitely better than she fit in the field she ran with in this past meet.
So it's leagues better.
Yeah, so let's not even get it twisted. All right. But her being able to get back on track and improve as a runner, because, you know, you and I, we never expected her to be on Shelly Ann's and level. And what's the other lady who won?
Elaine.
Yeah, Elaine Thompson. So we never expected her to be on their level, but we believe she can get to their level. But the thing is just focusing and things. But you the track, man. You've been running, you've ran track pretty much your whole life. You coach track now. So put your track coach hat on. Put one side as track coach, the other side, if you was her big brother, you're a track coach. So following these losses that she has now and everything that's just going on, the Allyson Felix thing, the spicy tweets, the all that, if you had a chance to sit down with her, what would you say to her? Coach, let's go coach first, and then let's go real one. So as a coach.
I mean, it would be the same in both situations because I coach my athletes like their big brother. So, you know, first things first, I would tell her to get off the internet. You know what I'm saying? Just let's get a PR person. Let's shed all of that internet. Like, you directly, you ain't got time for the internet anyways.
Right.
Get off it. Get your, you know what I'm saying? Let's find somebody else to take care of your shit. Every once in a while, you want to check in and say, yes, bitch, this is me. That's cool. But for the most part, we ain't got time for that. Two, I find it hard to believe 30 days off would create this kind of performance. Mind you.
Okay.
If she qualified for the Olympics running a 10.6, 10.86, right?
Okay.
She only had 30 days off. She should have been training, but I think it's clear that she wasn't.
She probably was grieving.
So there's an issue there still, because even if you are grieving, you're still in the middle of a track season. The Olympics is not the, you know what I'm saying? There's a whole season after the Olympics, as we're now seeing.
Right.
So you get a, you know, you can grieve on your own time, or you can grieve on the track, but you still got to get this work in. So, and that's not being insensitive. That's just like, those are the type of sacrifices that world-class athletes have to make.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I might give you a couple light days of training where you could really get your head together, and we'll focus on something where you can just run and get lost in thought, or sprint and get lost in thought. But that also depends on the athlete. She might not need to be lost in thought. She might need to be focused and directed. But I think right now, I don't know that she's really even taking any of these things seriously. So my bigger concern at that point would be, as her coach, well, what are you doing out here? Because she ran a slower race in this heat that we just saw in Italy than she ran at the Prix.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think her performance was dictated toward the actual competition in this particular past race?
I think that might possibly be it, because she looks like she gives up on races. If she doesn't see a clear pathway to victory, from what I've seen of her since she's gone pro, she gives up on races. That's a mentality thing. If she's not in the top three and making a big push to get to, you know what I'm saying, catching people, she chalks it up. And I've seen her do that in quite a few hundreds now. In the 200, you saw her put forth a little bit of an effort because she was catching people. So it's a totally different Sha'Carri.
Yeah.
I don't know that she's running down to the competition. I think she's struggling with confidence. And I think the losses and the lack of support that she's getting, everybody piling on, I think it's fucking with her head. Right. She's trying to act tough and brush it all off, but it's clearly messing with her. There's no way you go from running a 10-8 to running an 11-1.
Right.
And there's nothing physically wrong with you. And we're talking about in the span of 30 days. That's all mental. There's something going on up here that they need to lock in on. I can't even say it's the training, because, again, I've coached kids that have taken – I've coached not even just kids. I've coached high school and college-level athletes as speed trainers for these guys. And they'll take a month off and come back and maybe a couple hundredths of a second slower, a tenth of a second at most. You're talking about in her situation, her being damn near a whole half a second slower in a 100-meter dash.
She's not well. I don't care what nobody say. Like, you don't find out your biological mother died in the fashion that she found out, and you're just supposed to be over that. Like, I could be wrong, but I believe she's still dealing with the grieving with that. And then you're dealing with the grieving with that, and then all these other things start happening. So you have a negative snowball just form.
Right.
She's not well.
No, she's not.
She can't be. And so we definitely commend her for still being able to push through, because she still has an obligation as an athlete that she has to stick to.
You commend her, not me.
Well, why you say that?
Because she's a world-class athlete. This comes with the territory. She's not new to this.
So, you know, I was I Am Athlete, the podcast. They have a I Am Athlete LA.
Uh-huh.
And it's I can't remember the guy who's like the main host in like the Brandon Marshall position type. I can't remember his name. But you have basketball players, Brandon Jennings and Nick Young, Swaggy P. Nick Young. Then you have what's the boy's name? Michael Bennett, the defensive end, Michael Bennett, that played for the Seahawks. And it's another guy. I don't know who he is. I can't remember his name. You know, so they were talking about the Simone Biles situation, Simone Biles, Naomi Osaka situation, and the mental health surrounding. And you know, listening to world class athletes talk about world class athletes gives you a different perspective. So, in concert with what you were saying, that's what they were saying is, hey, you're a world class athlete. So this is literally what you're expected to do. You're expected to, like, something that a regular athlete, it would sideline them. As a world class athlete, it's something that wouldn't sideline you. Now, that's a bit, I do think Simone Biles' situation is a bit different with
it. It is. Because, but I get the angle.
Right. Because, you know, ain't no way in hell I'm finna ask that young lady to get up there and do all that twisting and her equilibrium and all that stuff is off. She can kill herself. But like you say, the mindset and the idea is, it is what it is. If you sign up to be a world-class athlete, those are the expectations.
But the other thing is, and this is where I go back to, she needs better people around her. Because if I was her friend in her corner and I had her ear, I would have advised against running in the pre's. But after the performance in the pre's, I would have told her to sit the whole season out. Since you're not there right now. Physically, yeah, you smoke these hoes. I ain't even on that. But mentally, you know, you're not mentally where you need to be, especially after Elaine Thompson ran a 10.54 and Shelly Ann Fraser was right behind her with a 10.7. And it, like, sis, you got to be in a mind state to hit those kind of times. Mentally, that's total congruency between mind and body on the track to be able to run those kinds of times. you not even breaking the 10-second barrier, the 11-second barrier. That's how out of whack you are right now. You need to take this whole season, relax. Just relax. Still do the training and shit, but just relax. And if you so think, if you think that you are ready to run at the end of the season, run at the end of the season. But don't do this where you're getting smoked in the first half of the season, because that's going to fuck with your confidence. It's going to make it that much harder championship time for you to perform. Don't do that.
Yeah.
That's what I would tell them. But I'm not giving her, I give her credit for showing up. But that's about all I can give her. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, but at least that's, I mean, the average person won't show up.
Yeah.
Most of these people who are talking shit about her won't show up. Most of these people who talking shit about her, they won't show up even if they face half the adversity that she's faced. That's why she's different. That's why she's on TV. That's why she's a special athlete. That's why she caught the attention of the nation. She has, yes, she's not winning right now, but you got to admit, she has it.
Yeah, she's definitely got whatever that it is that draws people, that magnetism. She's definitely got it, and she's got the talent. We know she has the talent.
Look, black women said that because Carrie couldn't run in the Olympics, that the Olympics was basically Olympics don't like black women. And they said that, and she was so engaging that black women said that while ignoring other black women because she wasn't running.
Yeah. I mean, anybody that says that she doesn't have whatever it is that makes her a magnetic force is a hater and a liar.
Yeah.
She has it. I'm not a big fan of her right now. And I'm going to be totally transparent here. I've never been a big fan of her. I've always recognized her talent, though. She's talented. I just always saw all of these other things that are now starting to get in the way of her talent being able to shine. But all of that being said, this is where we learn that it takes more than talent to be a world-class athlete. You got to play this game of politics. Sports is politics just as much as anything else. And right now, she's failing the game of politics. Because if she was playing the game of politics well, she would still be in the good graces of a lot of people, even in her defeats, even in her losses. People would still be taking up for her.
I think the tit for tat or the snapback to Allyson Felix really was what pumped the brakes for a lot of people.
Yeah. Because, yeah.
You know, it's like, hold on. So why are you coming at Allyson like that? Like, unless Sha'Carri and Allyson got something going on that nobody knows about.
But even if that's the case, that's Allyson Felix. You keep that to yourself. She's one of the most well-respected track and field stars in the history of the sport, period, over the world.
Allyson Felix is the Beyonce of the track and field.
I don't even know if we can say that, because Beyonce got people that don't like her. I ain't never met nobody that don't like Allyson Felix.
Okay, Allyson Felix is the Claire Huxtable of track and field.
Back when she was Claire, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, because you ain't never, except for this, Howard.
Well, people don't like her now, but she ain't Claire Huxtable no more.
People at Howard. But you know, we know Howard has a history of that stuff. You know, go fam you. But because it's like, we don't, unless they've done a great job of hiding her viciousness or whatever, we don't know anything that Allyson Felix has done wrong. Now, we're not saying Allyson Felix is perfect and she's infallible, but we don't have any evidence or any history of Allyson Felix rubbing people the wrong way. And
she played the game well.
And the most decorated American, probably the most decorated track athlete of all times, Olympic wise.
In America, yeah. In terms of the Olympics in general, there is a Polish dude, middle distance runner. I think he has one or two more medals, Olympic medals than her.
But this is the person you snap back at after, because all we saw, and I use an analogy, we saw Shakira trip and fall in the street. This is the analogy. We saw Shakira trip and fall in the street. Allison reached her hand out to help her up. And Shakira, get your goddamn hand out my face. I don't need you. That's what we, to America, that's exactly what America saw. Whether that's what actually happened or not, that's what America saw. So
she's good. I mean, look, the reason why I'm not pressed is because track and field is field. And I'm not even really pressed about Shakira Richardson. She is who she is. She's going to grow and learn. She is only 21, 22 years old.
Yeah,
hopefully she'll grow. She'll learn. I do think she'll still be around unless she can't get over this hurdle.
But internet people, this is why a Black American or just even a Black American or a Pan-African code of conduct is needed. Because, yes, people do need to be checked. Sometimes people have to be checked in public. But people needing to be checked doesn't mean a barrage of checking from the people on social media, because you are now in your feelings. We need to find a... Of course, I'm hollering at the moon with this, but we need to find a better way to rein each other in rather than just, hey, what you said, I don't like what you said. Fuck you. We're in social media. We finna drag you through these social media streets, because the internet is undefeated. The internet don't give no fucks. But we got Black Twitter, all these black social media spaces. Stop acting white. Stop acting like white people. Stop treating each other like white folk. Don't call yourself the Black space, then all your actions are like white people.
Well, that was what I was going to say. That, to me, that's the biggest issue, are the extremes on both sides. The people that are just attacking her for no reason. And I'm not talking about the Caribbean people, because they got a reason. I get that. But I'm talking about Black Americans who are excited to destroy her. Like, that's not cool. That's not cool. And then on the other end, I'm talking about those people that are going overboard defending her. Well, if you don't like her, you don't like Black women. How is that the case? Track and field is dominated by Black women. Like, that literally makes no sense whatsoever. So I think the issue for me is just the people on both sides. There's a way you can uplift her and check her at the same time. And there's a way that you can put her down when she needs to be put down without stabbing her in the face and stepping on her neck. Shakira Richardson ain't done nothing worthy of her neck being stepped on. Now, she's done something worthy of being put down and put in time out. Absolutely. And there are, you know, dozens of other world-class Black female athletes that we can focus on. But the fact that we are spending so much time on Shakira Richardson just goes to show that she has whatever it is.
We talked about her multiple times on here, and we're very selective about what we talk about. So, hey man, Shakira, keep improving, but we need to get a team around it. We do need to get.
Yeah, get off the goddamn internet. Get a support group and get back to the track.
Right. All right, man. So let's go ahead and lead into our third story. We'll be talking about the U.S. war in Afghanistan. 20 years of U.S. occupation in Afghanistan. So just quickly give you the short, and then we'll give you more detail about it. But so before the year 2000, the Taliban was in control of Afghanistan. And correct me if I'm wrong, is Taliban with the strict Sharia law?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. So strict Sharia law, one of the main things that, of course, you know, America focuses on is the oppression of women, real oppression of women, and oppressive. It's an oppressive state. It's an oppressive ruling under the Taliban. And America came in. America defeated the Taliban 20 years ago, and America spent 20 years there basically fending off the Taliban, even though the Taliban had plenty of different attempts to try to take back over within the last 20 years. So finally come this year, Joe Biden, after 20 years, a lot of money been spent. They really can't spend no more money on this. So they had to pull the troops out. And just as fast as they pulled the troops out, that's how fast the Taliban took back over. And here we are now, and a lot of people, you got a lot of these armchair and these social media warriors who are upset that it happened, but they ain't gonna do a damn thing about it other than just scream at stuff and type stuff. But in reality, the occupation had to end at some point. It had to end. The American occupation had to end at some point. So, like, one of my first questions, and you can help me out on this, is what state was Afghanistan in within these past 20 years that didn't allow them to be able to build a sizable enough military to protect themselves or protect the citizens from the Taliban taking the country back over? That's what I want to know.
The fact of the matter is, the Taliban was created to be a military force. And over the last 30 years, they have been fine-tuning their ability to engage in warfare. Those men are warriors in the truest sense of the word. They're willing to die for their cause. And that's not something that can be trained into you. And I'm saying that as a member or a veteran of the United States military. They can't train being willing to die for your cause into you.
Right.
That's something that has to be shaped and molded into you over a duration of time. And over the last 20 years, America has tried to create an Afghan military with that mindset. And basically what we just saw was that it was unsuccessful, because there were enough troops, enough munitions, enough armor, enough vehicles, enough structure, and everything else for the Afghan military to hold back the Taliban. There was enough there. They had more troops. They were better armed, better equipped, better technology, better everything.
Taliban was just better soldiers.
And so this is where I get into, like, you know, I've said it a couple times now. This is what happens when somebody with a mission meets somebody with a job.
Yeah. Well, I forgot what I was watching, but it was talking about the type of people that the United States military recruit versus the type of people they might should recruit. Because crazy motherfuckers who actually really do live for killing people can't go into the military.
Right.
But people who got sense like me and you, they want us. Like, I'm gonna think 3-4 times before I do this shit. But crazy ass Jim down the street, Jim wanna take somebody's head off. So that Taliban is full of crazy motherfuckers, and Afghan is full of people like me and you.
Yeah, I mean, not even to, like, psychological warfare was played when the Taliban came in. They started killing the people that put up resistance and letting the people that gave up and surrendered live. How long do you think the military is going to hold up? A bunch of people with jobs are going to hold up when they find out all I got to do to live is not fight.
Yeah, they gonna quit.
And that's what was happening. The Taliban pretty much walked through the streets without a shot fired. Pretty much. So it's, I mean, it took them less than 10 days to take over the city. Less than 10 days to take over the city. A city that at one point the United States projected that the Afghan military could probably hold this city for 6 months. Right before Biden pulled out, they adjusted it to the Afghan military will probably collapse in 30 days. Even that wasn't enough. They collapsed in 10 days.
That's
you can't take... There are certain blocks in America that couldn't be taken in 10 days.
Look, right. Right. There are hoods, there are ghettos in America with less firepower and full of grandmas that you cannot take like that. Because there are neighborhoods in America that a police force who's more armed in these neighborhoods do not go into.
Right.
Unless they got the SWAT team. Yeah.
So when I think about, and it was a lose-lose for Biden, presidents going all the way back to the one right after Bush was saying that we're going to get out of Afghanistan, and none of them ever pulled the trigger because they knew that this would happen. So I give Biden a lot of credit. He knew it was going to fall apart, but he did it anyways. Because it was, in my opinion, the right thing to do. America has got to start leaving places. We can't just keep going places and staying there. And so, you know, I feel like Obama should have pulled out. Honestly, when Trump was talking about pulling out, I actually supported that.
I've never pulled out of anything.
Turns out he was right. You know, and then so this isn't on Biden. This isn't on the American government. I wouldn't even say it's on the Afghan people themselves because they didn't have a lot to do it. This is on the Afghan military.
I mean, look, because that's what I was having this conversation with the young guy when we first learned about it. And he was like, man, I feel like the United States should have stayed longer. I feel like the United States should. And I'm like, just like, well, damn, like, Afghanistan is a country on their own. Like, at what point did the motherfuckers be able to stand on their own two damn feet?
After 20 years, bro?
That's a long goddamn time.
That's a long time
to not be able to build your military back up.
I'm listening to people talk about Afghanistan at this point. I'm listening to teenagers talk about how we should have stayed longer. And I'm like, we were there before you were born.
But those same people will complain about the military spending. Make your goddamn mind up. You can't complain about military spending on one end and then the other end be like, hey man, well, I think y'all need to stay over there. Stop. Like, people have to stop trying to be more righteous soldiers and justice warriors and stuff like that. You're not more self-righteous than the next person. Like, people have to stop trying to be the next.
Right.
People are literally trying. I have to be on the right side of history. Motherfucker, just live. Just like, you should inherently know the difference between what was doing something to somebody that's helping them and doing something to somebody that's hurting them. If you don't know, then you one of these different motherfuckers. But to actually put in the effort to go out to be on the right side of history, that to me makes it seem like you're trying too hard. Just be a good person, genuinely, and you will end up on the right side of history. That's why I be trying to tell the young folks, stop trying too hard. Because you are in your attempt to be a social justice warrior, you're actually doing more harm than good.
Everybody's clout chasing, man.
But in this situation, it's like they should have stayed. They should. Are you going to go over there?
Right, and it's a bunch of people that ain't never served, and I ain't never gonna serve.
Because it's resource. One of the one of the main resources that the military need to stay over there is humans. You can't just, because they cycling people in and out. So I'm just saying.
Some people are nuts, man. People like this Afghan shit, like I said, this ain't on the U.S. military. There was no way to pull out and not have this happen short of absolutely destroying the Taliban. And that wasn't going to happen. We tried that. Didn't work. You know, when I do find it interesting, everybody's blaming Biden for this, but the current leader of the Taliban is a man that Trump let out of prison when he was trying to make a deal with the Taliban. He let this man out of prison and he became the leader of the Taliban. He took back up his leadership role and is now the leader of the Taliban.
Because it's all connected. I'm just,
hey, man.
My conspiracy hat. Did I just put my conspiracy hat on?
I think you did.
It's all connected.
Hey, man, you know, it's the large format.
You know, this is where we need a button for that weird music, that alien music to be playing while we say that. But hey, man, you know, I don't know nothing, man. I just enjoying my new microphone and sound my voice. So, ladies, any ladies out there trying to get pregnant, I got the format for you. I got the format for you. So holler at your boy if you're a good, honorable woman and you're trying to get pregnant, holler at my format.